Hey there, cats and kittens. I'm Mike Coughlin, and this is the Half Guarded Hour at halfguarded.com with a nice cold open because I didn't get around to getting music done specifically for this show. And anyways, this is the first of 3 days in a row worth of podcasts, probably in a row, at least three this week. I did all of these last night, and they got progressively drunker and drunker. I was going to throw them out of order, but I don't care, actually, because I think it's funnier to build up to the end of the last show, which... they're all good, actually. But first up is Dazza here. Dazza from the website. You know, that guy who does all the great work. We had a magnificent conversation, and probably would have talked longer, but I had to take a piss really bad at the end. So anyways, without further ado, I bring to you all Dazza, and we'll just, listen to that.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Coughlin, founder, dude, and all-round mastermind at halfguarded.com. You're listening to the Half Guarded Hour, and I need filler in between awkward, segments. And so this is my little filler. We now rejoin the Half Guarded Hour or whatever program you're listening to, which was previously recorded in drunkenness, probably. Thanks.
Hello.
Dazza?
It's me.
Oh, I got it. I got it fucking working. Okay, good. I was searching for your name for a while, and I spelled Wadsworth incorrectly because I had an O instead of an A at one point because I'm a moron. but this is a recording. Everybody, this is the first guest. I probably already did a cold open, but I didn't do it yet, so I don't really know. But we have Dazza on the line here. Dazza, who is, you just go publicly by Dazza, right? Like even on the comic show, you don't use your real name, right?
No, I pretty much use Dazza, and he's kind of stuck.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah,
It's funny because like I always in my head it was always Dazza, and I'm wondering if that's like one of those like twat versus twat things. And I've always like because like the other day like the show is Half Guarded Hour, halfguarded.com. This is on iTunes now, but the feed's all fucked up, so it's my show and Comic Conversations a whole bunch, and I don't know what the hell is going on, so they're getting free hits off the zero subscribers I have. Anyways, I have no idea what we're going to talk about, so you start. What's new? What's new in the United Kingdom or whatever?
Oh, God, what's new? Well, nothing, as usual, because all the good stuff happens over at your place. we had the cup final today.
I saw that. I can't.
Yeah.
Oh, the fucking late goal from United there.
Yeah. I mean, I always tend to, in the FA Cup, I always tend to root for the underdog anyway. You know, but that's like, the romantic in me. I have no real allegiance to any of the big sides or the Premier sides or anything. So I always basically go for the underdog. So I was, it was good to for Crystal Palace. You know, and plus it's always fun seeing the big teams like lose on the big stage, but you know.
Well, yeah, as a proud Liverpool fan, I was very, very much hoping that Crystal Palace would pull it out. But on the other hand, I think in the long run, it's a good thing because this might just lead to another year of Louis van Gaal, and that's fantastic news for anybody that hates United. But actually, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to start with that. We'll get to fighting and comics and shit later on. But this is a good thing to talk about because I think it's really difficult for, us Americans to truly understand the loyalty that people would have to a football club. And it's like, what's your local team? What's the team?
Barnsley.
Okay. And, you basically grew up with them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, everybody in your town, like, it's like, it was a given. That's your team, no matter if they're championship, Premier League, whatever the third division is called, or whatever. Like, that's your team, no matter what, right?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I mean, you do get some people who will basically find an excuse to root for the big team. So you'll get like Man United, for example, and Arsenal and stuff like that. They'll have sort of fans in cities or up and down the country. But generally speaking, most, actual proper loyal football fans they'll basically support the team, you know, the local team that they grew up with. Even if you're living like a small town that has like a virtual, like an amateur team, you know, and that you go to them as about like 30 people and you'll have like, you know, one stand for the whole ground and the ground's all shitty and messed up and everything. That's still your team. You know, that's the one. That's, you know, that's the loyalty, that's the one you go for. And there are some really, I mean, in our, how it works is we basically get sort of like four divisions and you get promotion and relegation at the end of each season. And, but even below that, you get like, there's like a league called the Conference, and which is, you know, even smaller sides. And then below that, you get like local leagues and like really, really tiny local clubs. You know, some of them are like amateur level. And stuff like, you know, so, you know, and people like, you know, they will support that team, but, you know, that's what you do.
And I would guess on some level, it's even if like you don't like follow football, you're still aware of what's going on because that team represents the city basically as far as, you know, the rest of England is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, not everyone in the UK is, you know, is a football fan, but you sort of, you know who the team is, you know, for your area. And if, for example, I mean, one of the beauties of the FA Cup is that basically everyone's in the FA Cup. Mm-hmm. You know, all the, even like the really tiny teams, they have basically like qualifiers for all like the amateur size and the lower team. And then they basically, the bigger leagues are entered at sort of each stage. You know, mm-hmm. But what you do get is you will get these like really, you know, in the, when the big clubs get into it, it's basically a blind draw. There's no seeding or anything. They just, everything just like goes into a bowl and they basically just pick teams out. So you often get like a really, really tiny side will basically, you know, play host to Man United.
Oh yeah. I saw that last year and I think it was last year. I can't remember who Liverpool played, but they played a small club, and the other club they drew, so they had to fucking redo the match. And but in that time they did it in Anfield. The first first game was at this club's home grounds. And to put this in perspective to Americans, like, they probably had as many people, like, seating capacity as your average high school football team. Like there was like maybe 5,000 people that could get in there. And it was really cool because, you know, they drew against Liverpool. But it is one of those really neat quirks, I think, about, I don't know if it's all of Europe. I know at least English football, where, in theory, 11 dudes who are just friends could play well enough to get into Wembley Stadium and play against the biggest teams in the world. Is that fair? I mean, they're not going to do it, but
yeah. But yeah, theoretically, you know, you could theoretically, because it's a blind draw and everything, and you could get a really small club that could get to the final just by playing other small clubs. It wouldn't happen because eventually they'd meet like, you know, a big team or even like a medium sized team or anything. But the it is. Conceivable that by the look of a draw, they could, you know, you could basically get a really, really, you know, good run and maybe get to the, get to the final that way. But it's unlikely to, you know, to ever happen. But it is like, you always get these great stories in the FA Cup of really small sides, you know, sort of, you know, even if they just get a draw or get a win just against a couple of years ago, my team Barnsley, we're in like the third division. It's basically called League One because they changed the names around, but it's effectively the third division. Although next week we're actually, we're in the playoff final. If we win that, we actually go up to the second tier thing. But the, we were playing this, even at the level we were playing this like really, really small side. I forget who we were. And they basically, took us to a draw and they were considering that. They actually considered us like giants. You know, they considered it like, you know, that it was like almost a giant killing, but, you know, and everyone was basically getting behind them because they'd managed to, like, you know, and it was just like really weird because we're normally the ones who are basically the small team going up to, like, you know, sort of, you know, facing off against like the multi-million dollar, you know, million pound clubs and stuff like that. And, you know, for that once we were like, we were kind of like, you know, the bad guys. It was really weird.
I like that you corrected yourself when you said multi-million dollar and then went, no, yeah. Pound. It's like, you're talking to basically primarily an American audience who would understand, yeah. You know, a dollar, and you switched to pound just to keep that British, you know, quality there. Like, you want to keep your rep intact. But, okay.
Plus, I don't think I called it soccer either. I called it football the whole time because you guys call it soccer.
Well, I didn't call it soccer yet either. Even though that comes from association football, and that's where the word soccer comes from because they had association football and rugby league football and other football. So, anyways, but soccer just sounds weird. Like, I don't know. Real quick, before we get into, you know, more pressing things, because I don't get to talk to British people and I have no one to really talk to about football. I wrote a column, and I think I did an okay job putting it in perspective, but what has been the actual reaction in the UK, or, you know, you're part of the UK, to the incredible story of Leicester City?
It's been amazing, because it was just one of these things that you could never really see coming. You know, it was just like, it's weird because you'll get these teams that basically, you know, you got to Christmas and you got to Christmas and they were sort of at the top of the table and you're thinking, wow, you know, but, you know, they can't believe it, they're at this level, you know, if they sort of like, but even so, you think eventually, you know, the results are going to run out and they're basically going to go, you know, it was never conceivable that this team was going to basically, you know, go all the way. It's just been like an incredible, and I think it's been great for the, you know, the Premiership, because before it's always been the big teams that have sort of that have won it.
Yeah, it's always basically been three teams that compete for the title, and like maybe three more teams that compete for the fourth spot. Yeah, especially since City got bought by rich oil dudes, and now it's like, you know, City, Chelsea, and. I wish I could pretend that Arsenal would contend for the title spot, but we all know they're coming in third or fourth. And then below them, United, Liverpool, Tottenham are kind of competing for that. Maybe if we have a good year and Steven Gerrard doesn't fucking slip and fucking trip against Chelsea with like a fucking moron and waste a fucking only season we had with Luis Suarez not being an asshole. But, and then you have Leicester, which... Again, like, this is a team that almost got relegated, and anybody's listening, they almost got kicked out of basically the major leagues of, English football last year, and a year later, they won everything, and I have no idea how. I've watched all their games, I'm like, Jamie Vardy is not that good. Like, he's just, like, he's good, and he's gonna, but I guess he might start for England in the Euros, but, I think Harry Kane, I mean, I know Harry Kane's way, way better. But, and then all of a sudden they just kept winning, and it's one of those things where it's not like they got, like, oh, we squeaked into the playoffs and we won a bunch. Like, the FA Cup, you know, for us Americans, you know, it's a one and done, so you can have a fluky off day. To win the Premier League, you have to be the best team over 38 games, and they weren't just the best, they were clearly the best. They had a 10-point, you know, they won by 10 points. And so it's just, I'm rambling, and this is crazy, so fuck it. What time is it?
I was just going to say, one of the things you got to realize as well is that, you know, even with the money that went into, you know, because they sort of had a higher, you know, they have this money going to a goodbye place, it's not just that to actually get, it's not just a case of having money, but if you've got so much money, you will get certain players who are sort of like, you know, mercenaries, journeymen, whatever you want to call them. But for, you know, a city like Leicester is like, it's not a glamorous city. To get big players, you've not just got to pay them well. You've got to be like, sort of have like, you know, be a big city. You know, you've got to be either London or Manchester or, you know, somewhere that basically can, you know, get, you know, has that sort of,
a lifestyle. Like, nobody wants to go to, even if you have a, you buy a guy for 90 million pounds, if his choice is to live in London and play for Chelsea or live in Leicester City, where he'd have to look it up on the map and go, what the fuck are the Midlands? And, then he's screwed, but, anyway, go on.
And also a team that basically, you're guaranteed again European football with. Because, yeah. It's not just a case of, winning on that. It's basically being in the top four or, to get European football. And you wouldn't have even thought Leicester would get that. So for what they've done to actually, the only thing, I'll be honest, I love football. I'm not an expert. I can't really, analyze it too great and not be a total phony. But there's a really good book. I think it's called The Money Game. And it's basically about sort of looking at football statistics in a different way. It's a similar sort of thing to that, Moneyball that they made the film out of, about the baseball. And it's worth sort of, checking out that. I won't basically go into it a great deal because it's very in depth, but it basically looks at a totally different way of sort of analyzing what players are actually valuable and, and putting like statistics stuff and finding out that the ones who you basically think of, it's not just a case of the ones who score a goal. It's the ones who score what they call vital goals, ones which actually win matches as opposed to ones who basically just score, about three goals in like a 6-0, drubbing and stuff like that. And I'll try to send you a link to it at some point. So I read it and it's like a really interesting book. And it's all about basically just sort of look at different ways to actually recruit teams and like win matches and sort of thing.
Yeah, I kind of wondered that because baseball is a game it's very easy and it lends itself to high in-depth analytics because you have so many of the exact same sequence of events happening. 500 times a year a guy comes up to bat. Thousands of times a year a guy throws the ball. So you have so much data you can kind of even it out. Whereas other sports like football. It would be difficult because you look at Leicester and if you take any of those guys and you put them on another team, they're probably not going to be as good. But because of the system, the way Ranieri developed everything, everybody trusted in each other, they didn't get exhausted, they didn't have the bad injuries, they were truly the embodiment of the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. And it's really, it's fascinating because I don't think that they can keep it up for another year. I do think that, sadly, money will win out. And there's a reason why, Real Madrid played like shit this year and they're in the fucking Champions League final because they just have so much talent. Go on.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I don't know what contracts they're on at Leicester and stuff, but you get the feeling that now they've got this, that they'll basically the team will fall apart. Somewhat, but some of the top players will basically get sort of offers to go elsewhere and stuff like that. By the way, I've just looked it up. The book I'm talking about is called The Numbers Game. It's by Chris Anderson.
The Numbers. Why am I writing shit down when I can just listen to the show? Anyways, all right. So we're done talking about shit that I want to talk about because I geeked out because I can talk about football. You have a column and it came in. It's very timely, even though this is being recorded on. Saturday or Sunday. What time is it, by the way, for you?
It's getting close to midnight.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like 2 or 3.
That's no. We're fine.
All right. Good. Preacher. I love Preacher. It's going to be on AMC here in the States and I think the UK or something. I don't know.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
In the UK. They're going to download it the day after America. So, so we'll get, straight away. So, yeah, it's on Amazon Prime.
So, I could gush about it, but I'll let you do it because no one wants to hear me speak. Talk about Preacher and tell me why this is an amazing comic. I know you wrote a column. It's up there on the halfcredit.com. But just talk about it, why it's so great.
Oh, God, where do you start? I mean, it's basically like a... It's like a very weird road movie. It basically the whole premise of it is basically that it turns out that basically God does exist, but he's basically walked out of the kingdom of heaven and left everything in disarray, and he's basically just sort of gone drifting. And the main character is called Jesse Custer, who's basically he's decided that he's basically going to track God down and basically, make him basically face up to everything that he's basically ever done in his life and basically, to answer to the people that he's messed around and stuff. So he teams up with an Irish vampire called Cassidy and his girlfriend, Tulip, who's kind of like a on-off hit woman. And they basically just go sort of, you know, on this sort of trek across America. And just, it's just amazing because the, and it's going to be very different from a TV show, but it's just amazing that basically the amount of characters that they meet, you know, along the way, that, you know, they get into trouble with this sort of like this, this religious sect called the Grail, who are basically and they've basically been sort of planning this conspiracy. To where they're basically gonna, what they've been doing is they've basically been protecting the bloodline of Christ. But the way they've basically been doing this is to basically, they managed to, get a child from Jesus, and then to keep it pure, they basically had him, sort of like kept them inbred for thousands and thousands of years. So by the time it gets to the 20th century, they basically, I can hear a dog in the background.
Oh, yeah.
The Messiah that they're going to use to bring, you know, the true sort of offspring of Jesus is basically just a complete and utter retard, because it's just been inbred the entire, you know, for like two millennium. And it's
kind of like the royal family.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not, I would be offended if it weren't for the fact that I hate them as well. So yeah.
They exist for people like my mom to watch them when Princess Diana gets married and then dies at like 4 a.m. My mom wakes me up. Princess Diana's dead. And I'm like, why did you wake me up to tell me this? I'm not English. Also, God did not appoint her to become royalty.
I know a lot of Americans that, you know, absolutely love the royal family, but I don't know if it's because I'm in a working class town and stuff that we sort of don't have a sort of much respect for them. I think we sort of, royal family's one of these weird things where basically when there's like a jubilee or a wedding or something like that, everyone sort of gets into the party mood, but the rest of the time we just consider them like a waste of money. But going back to Preacher, it's just, it's amazing. It's basically a really violent, you know, at times, like, you know, really sort of edgy, you know, sick humor and everything like that. But you've also got these like three characters who are basically just, you've actually got this like incredible romance story running through it. With Jesse and Tulip. And it's this amazing character in that he's basically just sort of this, he's kind of like a wild, no-nonsense guy, but he's basically got this like real sense of honor. Mm-hmm. Throughout the series, and it's just an amazing, you know, amazing comic. When I read it, a friend of mine sort of, you know, said, "Oh, you got to check this comic out. It's amazing. There's this character called R-Space, because there's a young kid, you know, who basically tried to kill himself tried to copy Kurt Cobain, but he survived, and his whole face was messed up, and it looks like an arse. So he basically, you know." But it was just, you know, there's always like really sick humor, but you know, I sort of got every issue of it, and it was just like, just this amazing, you know, amazing comic. You really get into the characters, and Garth Ennis has got this like, he's got this like amazing talent for dialogue.
Yeah,
I mean, some of my favorite scenes in it were just basically ones where they would just be like, you know, sat on a car with a bottle of Jack Daniels talking.
It's funny because I know people will, you know, some people are always comic books or even if they read it, they kind of, you know, they, it's funny because there's absurd humor of the guy like being told, because one of the things, the main character, Jesse Custer, has the ability, he has the word of God, so he can tell people to do something and they will do anything he says, literally. And like one of the first issues or so, he tells the guy, go fuck yourself. So the guy rips his dick off and sticks up his own ass. And it's funny. And you kind of think, oh, this is what the kind of humor you're getting. But there are some poignant moments. And especially the phrase, I'll love you until the end of the world, is, to me, one of the most romantic things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it is simply, you know, an amazing comic. And one of the things about the, when I did the article, I left a lot of things like really, really vague, and that's because there's so much good stuff that if somebody actually sort of wants to read Preacher, that they will basically, they'll discover them for themselves, because there's so many sort of like, just twists in it and just revelations along the way that are just so amazing. I mean, there was years, I actually mentioned this in the article, there was years ago, there was this girl at work, and she was kind of, she kind of she'd see me reading comics from time to time, so she asked me questions so many. And I basically lent her a few issues of Preacher, and she was absolutely hooked. You know, basically sort of, you know, and afterwards, you know, she was like, what next? And anything else I sort of suggested and tried with it, she just couldn't get into it. But, you know, Preacher, she absolutely adored. She just got really into the characters. And it basically, I think the great thing about it is as well, it was, because it was Garth Ennis' thing, he had a plan of sort of like about 6 years that it was going to do it. And then that was it. You know, he had basically his plan, he did that. So it was basically just like, you know, the one story didn't basically get, you know, carried on by, you know, by other authors or anything like that. It was just basically his story. It was just an amazing piece. But, and you know, anyone who sort of like, you know, reads comics, and even people don't read comics, I think there's so much good stuff in there, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. But, and I'm real looking forward to this, this show. I'm not expecting it to be exactly like Preacher and to be a comic, and to be honest, I don't want to be, but I hope this first season is going to be setting the scene. I mean, I'm hoping it's going to be a bit like Walking Dead, where you follow Walking Dead, it's not like the comic, but you'll get to like a certain season and it'll be like, oh man, we're doing the prison scene. Or we're doing like, you know, that town with the, what's this guy? The big, is it the governor?
There's a governor, and now there's, what's his face?
Naden?
Yeah. Oh, Negan, Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's going to be like that, where you'll basically, you know, it goes its own way, but every so often it will basically, you know, I mean, they've got, if it goes well, and if it basically gets taken on for more seasons, which I really hope it does, if they do the storyline where the, where he runs into his grandmother.
Oh, yeah.
When, you know, I mean, that character was so absolutely horrible, but absolutely brilliant. At the same, you know, she was one of the most vile characters you'll ever meet in comics. And there's a bit where, I mean, I'm not going to say what it is, but there's a bit where something happens to Tulip. And when I first read it, it was like one of the most shocking endings to a comic ever. It was like, oh my God. It was just done so well, you know, but yeah, I think it's an amazing, you know, absolutely amazing comic. And I'm so glad it's actually managed to make its way onto TV, because I actually never thought it would, because at one point we're talking films and stuff like that. But yeah. I'm so glad it's made it onto a screen.
Yeah, I'm glad that it made it to TV or, you know, film in this era where people appreciate long form television. Because, you know, for years people are like, oh, would you do a movie? It's like, well, you could, but you would miss out on so much. Like, it's like doing a movie on the comic books, Sandman. Like, it's way better to tell the whole story because of everything that goes on. And Garth Ennis, to me, like, it is one of the all-time great comic books, and because it works on so many levels. Yes, it's dirty dick and fart joke humor. There's legitimate theological discussions involved about, you know, is God real? Who's really God and stuff, and, you know, things of this nature. But and this is something that I think Ennis has said publicly. If you can hear the beep, it's a fucking dryer. Don't look at me like that, dog. It really reads, if you're an American and you love America, because we're amazing, it reads like a love letter to America from an Irishman. And he's basically said that, like, because it's one of those things, it's, you expect, you know, rah, rah, I love America from, you know, right-wing people like me or whatever. But when you get it from an outsider's perspective and you see the things that obviously an Irishman speaking through the voice of a hillbilly from Texas, but you really, like, as an American, like, I come away reading that comic, because I just started rereading it, and instead of reading, you know, this week's shit, I just, you know, I'm on the train going to work, and I have, like, all this new stuff to read. I'm like, now I'm going to fucking read Preacher for 3 issues. But when you read it, you go, wow, we are a good country. Look at that. Look, wow, somebody really loves us. And and I always, you know, get the impression, especially with you, Dazza from HalfGuarded.com, who's probably one of our best writers, that you are.
Oh, you're about a mole.
Oh, you are one of my fucking. Oh my gosh, trust me, as the editor in chief and owner, or whatever. Your stuff is so good, because I will fucking. I have to proofread it and edit things a little bit here and there. Oh, it's so good. If you guys aren't at halfcarded.com, like, fuck this show. Fuck what I write. Just look for Daz's stuff, especially when you write about anything with Fool Britannia, which I love. Yeah. Oh, my God. Daz will write about this weird shit that only happens in Britain, like fucking, you know, cheese rolling and that weird fucking thing where, like, that one town just gets in a giant brawl for half a day or whatever, and then that ends up, like, against a wall that nobody ever climbed or some shit. Like, I don't even, like...
In Gurning.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, gosh. Gurney, yeah. Some people just figure their fucking faces look like Arse Face on purpose. And then you look at it, you go, what the fuck? And, like it's so weird. Because this is like, you know, as an America, Britain, you're like, oh, you know, we're kind of the same. Our cultures are the same. And, you know, everybody in America knows you guys watch our TV. And we steal your TV shows and redo them for America, like The Office and shit like that. But, it's like, then I read this shit, I go, are you serious? Like, what the fuck? Like, nobody in America has a competition where we mash up our faces and look weird or roll cheese down a hill. And this is a country that deep fat fried Twinkies. So, like, you guys are really, like, what the fuck? Like, you're basically the Holy Grail to America. You guys are, you know, a bunch of inbred islanders who never left. And America, you know, we're just a bunch of whores who banged everyone from Europe. And then we threw in some Latins and some stolen Africans. And that's what America is. But, I don't know, like, fuck. Oh, fucking A, we've done half an hour. That's fucking awesome. I didn't even go to any of my fucking weird topics that I jot down throughout the week. And then I think I talk about them on the show, and I have no idea if I talked about them usually because I don't remember most of these. But I know this one was not done. So, we did comics, we did football. Now we're going to do something that everybody loves to talk about, religion! You guys have more of a, it wasn't actually the UK, it was Belgium. There was a protest in Belgium against Muslims, the way they prepare meat, and some chick took a selfie and shit like this, and I was reading about it, and one thing led to another, and there's actually a part, I guess, I obviously just trust the first site that pops up on Google when you search for things, so I assume, oh, that must be correct, even though I've personally gamed that thing, so if you search for top 10 dicks or top 10 tits, halfguarded.com will show up. Well, not the tits one, the dicks one, though. Anyways, the Quran apparently has rules about how to purify yourself if you have had sex with an animal. Now, which of course it leads to the idea that this must have been such a prevalent problem at one point that somebody's like, we need to tell these people, look, you shouldn't be doing this, but if you did it, here's how to clean yourself in the eyes of the Lord. And I haven't read the whole Bible, just read the good parts. And I never saw that come up. Like, I don't remember the part where Jesus is like, and you shall feed your neighbor, and if you fuck a goat, you have to do, you know, three Hail Marys or whatever like that. So in England, because you guys fucking call them Asians, which I get because they're from Asia, but whatever. What has the response been? Oh, I don't know if I can tie this in. I really just wanted to, you know, talk, make fun of the, you know, goat fuckers. London, however, just recently elected the first Muslim mayor of a major world city, even though, like, I guess the mayor of London isn't really like a big deal. But what has the reaction been from the UK on to having a Muslim run your biggest country, your biggest city?
Well, I can only really speak for the area that I live in. The area that I live in really doesn't give a shit because we're basically like north. There's this thing that basically everything that goes on in London is basically the entire UK. And it's not because we're sort of like, you know, north. We're in Yorkshire, which is, you know, quite, you know, north of London. So we really don't really care, you know, what the, you know, what the mayor is or anything like that. You know, so, you know, I can only speak for this area, so it's kind of, you know, the mayor of London, it doesn't really mean, you know, that much outside of London, to be perfectly honest.
So, like, so, you guys in see that happen and be like, oh my gosh, there's been this big shift in England where we're becoming a Muslim country all of a sudden. We're going to lose our English way.
We've not taken to the streets yet. We've not started right yet. We've not started right, you know, burning down mosques or anything like that, or sort of, you know, powering all the Qurans up and setting them on fire yet or anything like that. No, it's just kind of, you know, one of those things. The mayor of London doesn't really, you know, if it was a prime minister, then maybe there'd be a little bit more, a bit more sort of worry. But no, I don't think that's really, so certainly it's not something that's, you know, cropped up for, you know, in our staff room or anything like that, you know. So, couldn't give us stuff about London, to be honest. But I've not sort of, like, you know, heard anything, you know, really sort of worrying about that. Whenever you get sort of, like, Muslims get into politics in the UK or sort of get elected in post and that, it's always sort of like a moderate, like, you know, friendly type of, you know, it's never the sort of like your you know, kill the infidels type sort of thing that you would fear anything like that.
You're telling me that Bin Laden would not get elected in London? That's good to know. Like, you know, I know Europe is a little more to the left than America, but it's good to know that you guys still draw the line at hardline extremist religious fanatics in office, even though you're a country that in theory has the queen as the head of your church, because you have a state religion. What's it like to have a state religion?
Well, I mean, it's yeah, you're asking me one person, because I'm an atheist.
Well, here's the thing. I ask you only because, like, everybody knows it's bullshit, and nobody, like, really holds it against, like, the I don't think they hold it against the queen, but, like, nothing was more telling than how much political bullshit's involved than when Tony Blair was the Prime Minister of England. And Tony Blair, obviously, was a brilliant orator, because he took everything that George Bush said and he said it himself. And I went, holy shit, it makes a lot more sense now. That's really awesome. I will bomb brown people now. Thank you, Tony Blair. You're really smooth on your feet. But he was like, his wife was Catholic, and he was a secret Catholic, and he loves Catholicism and all this shit, but he couldn't convert to Catholicism because the Church of England, he was, you know, the Prime Minister, and like a month after he was done being Prime Minister, he became Catholic, and all I could think of is, what the fuck? Like, this dude could not convert his religion based on political motivations, because obviously, you know, there would have been a significant portion of, I'm guessing, the right wing in England that would have been upset if the Prime Minister was a Catholic.
You see, I'll be honest, I honestly don't know who would have a... I mean, I guess if... See, I come from, like, a non-religious family. Mm-hmm. You know, so to me, it's overall rather real that I went to, like, a really religious school when I was young, because it was kind of like... It was really weird as a kid, because basically, I never went to church or anything like that. And I ended up going to this, like, really religious school, because it was considered, like, the best school, you know, in the area. And we used to have mass and stuff. And I used to, the first time we had mass, I kind of freaked out, because I didn't know what I was watching. Well, I'll put it this way, right? I'd heard of this guy called Jesus, because there was this, the musical Jesus Christ Superstar. So I'd heard of Jesus, and when we had Christmas, I knew of sort of, like, you know, Jesus' birthday sort of thing, but I didn't really understand it. When I went to school and I started talking about God, I didn't know what God was. I thought God was, like, the headmaster. They were sort of talking about God in assembly and stuff like that, and I thought, God must be, like, this guy that sort of, like, you know, sat in the office and running the school and everything. And then the first time that we had sort of the mass, I was sort of sat there as a little kid, and we had, like, the big altar and stuff, and then the guys all come out in, like, in the frocks and stuff, and they've got the big sticks, and they're also just singing, like, the hymns and going that. And then they start getting all the kids up, who were basically, like, the really religious kids, who were doing, like, the the ones who basically have, like, confirmation.
Oh no, those were the kids that they, you know, they were the ones that put out.
Yeah. Well, basically, to all going out and there and dealing, and they're being given, like, so to, like, this, like, you know, the bread, and then they're given wine, which I thought was the thing is that they call it, here's the blood of Christ. So I just see this red substance that they're drinking, and I'm thinking, oh my God, they're drinking blood. So I start to, like, freaking out and stuff, and then, the next time we had mass, I had to basically sit with the teacher, and she had to explain to me what everything was going on, so I wouldn't be scared, because I was thinking I was in some sort of, like, devil worshipping type place.
No. It's totally okay. We're drinking the blood of the good guy. It's all right. This isn't weird or anything like that. You can eat his skin in this really awful, you know, flowerless bullshit form, and if you drink blood, but it's from Jesus, you're not a pagan weirdo. You're just doing the Lord's work. Now shut up and bend over and take it. Fucking A. Alright, fuck that shit. Move on to something else here. I have Kentucky Derby written down, even though that already happened. Oh, fuck that shit.
We're going Victor.
Oh, yeah, and we did Invicta. Today was Venator, where Husamal Paulharas lost by getting drilled in the face by elbows in the first round in Italy. And Bellator last night was awful. Like, it was maybe the worst show ever. But fuck that shit, Invicta. Everybody, if you don't know, I don't even have to worry anymore. Like, I'll message you. I'll be like, hey, Invicta's coming up. And you're like, I already got most of the column done. I'm like, sweet. And Invicta, the all-women's MMA promotion and shit like that, we're going so long, this is going to be its own fucking podcast. Fucking hell, I'm going to have a bunch this week. Yes. Less work for me to do later. And Dazza here is our resident legitimate expert. Like, I read this shit, and I'm like, all right, I know this is like, because I only have so much time in my day. And most of it's spent drinking or doing drugs. Or watching regular MMA. So, I rely on you for the women's shit, and it's fucking awesome. So, I don't know. Say something great about Invicta. I say this, by the way, as I have UFC on in the background. I'm just watching Misha Tate choke out Holly Holm, because that's what I do on a Saturday night when I'm bored. I just watch old MMA. So, go Invicta.
Which, incidentally, just before going to Invicta, I did it one. Because I don't write about MMA apart from Invicta that often, because I don't like trying to pretend to be an expert where I'm not. I'm a fan. But when I do write stuff, I tend to write it about being the joy of the sport and, like, being a fan and stuff. That's why I wrote pieces like on Tommy Toehold and stuff like that, and how to enjoy being a fan. But one piece I was really proud of when I did MMA was the piece I wrote about Misha Tate beating Holly Holm. Because I did a piece on that, and I really enjoyed doing that. But Invicta... I mean, one of the things about Invicta, you said that basically I come across as I know my stuff. Basically, as soon as the card starts to come together, the first thing I do is I'll see, like, a fighter I've not seen before, and first thing I'm basically on YouTube watching all the fights. Because if you go on YouTube, you can basically find fights from pretty much over, like, the lower, you know, even at the amateur level. Oh, yeah. You know, if a fighter comes up, you can basically get about 3 or 4 fights. So it's basically spend all my time when I'm preparing to do the article. Just going through, or, you know, watching the fights, going through the interviews, going through the Twitter and just seeing what we are, you know, because I like to sort of, one of the things that I like about Invicta is the fact that basically it's still got that kind of way out personalities competing in it. Because for a woman to be a fighter, she's got to basically pretty much, to choose to do that, she's got to have something like really awesome in her, something like, you know, really way out. Because it takes me back to the early days of MMA and UFC, because something I think that UFC and MMA is losing is, at one point, all the people were, you know, doing that were basically crazy enough to do it because they had some, you know, so just really way out personalities, just got like an interesting, you know, mix of people who were just, and nowadays I think that because it's become more acceptable as a natural sport that you can basically do and do as a career, you're getting a lot more regular athletes who are basically not going into like boxing or wrestling or anything, but going into MMA, which is great, but they lack that kind of...
They're not quirky in the sense of like, the first, you know, decade or so of the UFC or the MMA, like if you were fighting, you did it because... you just like to fight. Like, you were getting paid $200 on an Indian reservation if you're lucky. And it's the same thing with the women, basically, where most of these women are either, you know, they've been around before Ronda Rousey, where they thought, oh, I can make money. So these chicks obviously have something a little different about them as far as how they perceive the world, because they are willing to fight for basically nothing. And even in Invicta, they're not really getting paid a lot. And so you really see people that truly love nothing but fighting. It's not a way out. It's not a way to make money or do anything. Like, it's not like you got some college educated Matt Hughes guy who, you know, has a 4-year degree from a real university and now he's a wrestler. And he's like, oh, I don't want to work. I'll just wrestle people and, you know, hold them down for a while for money. You've got these chicks who are like, yeah, I don't know. There's something wrong with me, but I want to beat the shit out of somebody's head of a cage.
Yeah, and when you actually read the stories of these, you know, they've got sort of amazing stories. I mean, there was a podcast with Tommy Evinger, who basically is awesome at talk. I mean, anytime you see a podcast with Tommy Evinger, I have to listen to it because she's just hilarious. But there was one where she basically went to build up her last fight. It was basically pretty much telling you her life story and how she got into fight, become a fighter. And just this, you know, the story, the stuff that she had to go through being like, you know, for a start being like, you know, a lesbian in a small town anyway, but also being sort of like, you know, wanting to be an athlete and everything, and just the things she had to overcome to get where she is, and just the stories of these people, you know, they've all got like, you know, amazing backgrounds, and they're all like really cool, creative people. Yeah, they're sort of like,
it's not like John Jones who's like, I was 20 years old and physically gifted and could do whatever I wanted, and I just did fighting, and I mastered this thing in 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff, I mean, just things like, when we do the weigh-ins and the coming in the outfits, I mean, Roxanne Modafferi obviously and stuff like that. And, you know, Christina Stanley, last week, she did, Invicta, she basically came on in like a Warriors gimmick. And she's actually taken that over because the other day she called out Rachel Ostovich for the fight. Oh. And she did it in the Warriors style. Have you ever seen the film Warriors?
From the
70s film.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. The bit where the guy's got the bottles in his fingers and he's going, Warriors, come out to play, yay. Well, she did a video of her doing that, but saying like, Ostovich, come out to play, yay. It's just like little things like that. And that, one of the things I love about Invicta.
That's so great. Sorry to interrupt, only because Rachel Ostovich usually dresses up like Wonder Woman, who's an Amazonian warrior, which is even better.
But you know, that's another thing that I love about it is they're still basically, it's still got that kind of like underground alternative sport feel to it. When you know, the fighters basically come out to like, you know, sometimes really weird music, or they'll basically come out in like, they look like fighters. You know, they dress in really good style. They're not like Reebok, where I think the Reebok thing has made so many of the fight, it takes away the identity.
Yeah, I think on the one hand, I'm sad because I'm no longer reminded that I need to go to Condom Depot all the time. But there's something to be said for, yeah, like everybody except for the main eventers, and this is going to change, I guess, in July, but everybody's either in white and black or black and white. And it's like, I'll watch fighters, and if I don't know who they are, I'm looking at them going, who the fuck are these people? Like, they're so generic. They look like creative fighters from a video game. From, you know, what I would design was 12, and I want to like be creative. And then you look at Invicta, and it's like, holy shit, Wonder Woman is fighting right now. What is going on? Or, you know, Modafferi would dress up like, Princess Katana from Mortal Kombat. It's like, this is way better.
Yeah, I mean, it's like with me sometimes, I will basically, I'll if I sort of like, yeah, I'm fast forwarding through like UFC to get, you know, if I'm like, you know, watching it, you know, before I go to work and stuff. And it's really tough to actually, sometimes you'll be fast forwarding and flicking through and like two fights will just seem to merge into one because they just look so similar. You know, and because they're wearing the same gear and everything like that, it's either black and white or white on black and stuff. And even some of it's like Tisha Torres, for example. When she was in Victor, she always basically, she'd have these like little skirts on and stuff like that. She kind of had like a bit of identity to herself, you know, that she'd sort of, you know, basically, and Felice Herring as well. She always used to come out sort of like, you know, dressed in something sort of, you know, so you know, thing. But now when we're in the UFC, it kind of takes away from this sort of, you know, the star power. They still look like athletes, and but it just takes away something from them. And, you know, and I know it's the way they want to go. They want to be professional and everything. But I really think they've messed up. And another thing as well, and that I've noticed, that it was sort of, you know, if you're a fan of a particular fighter, it's always great to basically buy some merchandise off them. So buy like some, like, you know, like a t-shirt or something and that fact. If we're in the UFC, that's all gone now. The only stuff you can actually buy is Reebok stuff.
Oh, yeah. And you look cool in that.
Yeah, and also, you know, damn expensive, like, you know, because, you know, if I was going to UFC 200, which I'm not actually going to, I'm going to be going to a viewing party, but one of my favourite fighters is Kat Zingano, and she's on the bill. I'd want to basically go with a Kat Zingano t-shirt, and she, and normally the fighters will basically sell their own stuff, and they get designed, you know, and stuff like that. Now they can't do that. You know, they can't be, you know, they've lost that sort of money stream. So, you know, I just think it's sort of, you know, the whole Reebok thing. I'm sure there's sort of like, you know, money to be made for the fight, stuff like that. But I think it's taken away, the sort of, you know, the specialness of MMA, the sort of the color and everything like that.
Yeah, it's a weird trend, because I think they patterned themselves after the NFL, where the NFL works because you can just interchange any of the players. Nobody gives a shit because you don't see them because they all wear helmets and shit like that. And you combine that with kind of like that, you know, professional baseball, old school, oh, play the game the right way bullshit. And I contrast that to like Europe, where, which is funny because despite all being, you know, communists and everything, you have corporate sponsors in all of your athletes' shirts. But the athletes, at least on, even if they're in uniform, get to pick their name. Like, they can, you know, if it says Ronaldo on the back, you know, Ronaldo's, that's not his last name. That's his second to last name or some shit like that. Or Kaká or whatever it is. Like, they can at least on some level somewhat distinguish themselves and call themselves whatever they want. Whereas in the UFC, it's like, oh, no, yeah, your shit's going to be, you're going to be white with black trim, and we're going to put your stupid name in here like this. Oh, and we might misspell it because we're fucking morons, and actually, I'll let you talk real quick, because I just talked a lot, so go on with something about Invicta.
Going back to Invicta, yeah, I mean, I absolutely just love it. I think it's just like a really, really fun promotion. It's sort of, you know, the fight, it's one of those things that, you know, the fighting standards isn't as high as the men, but they're still exciting fights to me. You know, there's something to be said for basically two people basically just willing to basically just like, you know, trade and try really weird shit, even if it doesn't come off, you know, and sort of, you know, spinning around. And I just think, you know, I think it's absolutely awesome. And just some of the crazy stuff that sort of, you know, goes on there. I think, you know, the real great personalities. I mean, Tonya Evinger, you know, I've already mentioned her, but, you know, she's just, you know, amazing. It was rather disappointing, the Wrestling Observer, but when it came to Invicta, the show that they had, but pretty much the only thing that they mentioned in the paragraph that they said about Invicta was the fact that Tonya Evinger had kissed Laura Sanko. Which seemed to melt Twitter, because everyone was sort of going, oh my god, that's assault and everything like that. And Tonya's like, chill out, Laura Sanko's like, he's fine, we're friends, it was just a thing, you know, stupid thing that we were doing, like, you know. But I just think it's just a really great promotion, and it's, you know, they only get small crowds and everything, but they have sort of, one thing I like about it and why I think they'll be around for a long time is they are very, They know that they are basically just like there as a platform for women's MMA. So if anyone, they're basically there to give some experience and some exposure to the women fighters who are good enough to eventually get into the UFC. But at the same time, they're also there for like fighters who are basically have been at UFC, things not worked out, or are basically, you know, not wanting to go to UFC, and are basically a home for those fighters who have got a name to come to. And also for those sort of fighters who are basically just starting off and just sort of, you know, wanting to, you know, make some sort of career in there. It's basically, you know, giving a chance, you know, for women to basically sort of like, you know, get some spotlight and get a promotion, you know, like that. So, you know, I mean, it's that sort of thing as well that as a fan, you feel like you're making a difference by supporting them. Yeah. You know, with UFC, you're basically just like one of, like, you know, millions, you know. Whereas if you basically, and then this is where, you know, with me, why I always write these things and have so much thing is, I'm not saying I'm making a difference at all, but if I can basically sort of like, you know, write an article and basically maybe somebody clicks on that and knows a little bit more about the fighters or something like that, it just feels like, you know, that I'm, you know, by supporting them, you sort of viewing their shows and everything, or buying a ticket to their shows, you're making a little bit of difference somewhere there.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the things I've noticed about the Invicta women. It's like, even though, you know, big UFC pay-per-views do big numbers on the website and stuff like that, my most satisfaction usually comes from Invicta, because most of those women are genuinely grateful to get publicity and press. And I remember, like, the first big-name fighter I can ever recall reading the site and mentioning anything was Roxanne Matafari, because I wrote play-by-play, and I said something along the lines of, Roxanne is awesome because she's not physically gifted.
I remember this.
Yeah, and she's fucking, like, she publicly said on Twitter, I love this, this is great, this is good, you know, play-by-play, and I'm like, and it was, like, days later, I'm like, this is, you know, first of all, Roxanne Matafari is great. I mean, if you don't like Foxy Roxy, you're a piece of shit and should probably die. But she was just like, it's like, this is someone who's been in the UFC, but, and it's kind of like the upper echelon of Invicta, but she just appreciated, in a real genuine way, somebody talking about what was going on. And that's what's great about Invicta. Like, the fighters really care. They give a shit. And I, you know, maybe it's easy for me to say because I'm a, you know, running a small ass, shit ass website and I'm desperate for clicks. But, you know, it's nice, and they are normal. I don't want to say they're normal. The women are unique. Like, I remember there was a certain individual who may be, sometimes go by the name of Chico, who came to Chicago once, and he and I went to a jiu-jitsu seminar with Pedro Sauer, and at the time, Felice Herring was at that seminar, and I knew her just because I'm a dork, but it was still years before women were in, you know, UFC or anything like that. She was actually a fucking white belt at Jeff Curran's school, and I looked at her, and I made some comments along the lines of, like, ah, fuck, she's gonna make it because she's pretty, and then you see all the work she did online, and Felice Herring is really a pioneer for women's MMA and marketing. Because she was very aggressive of marketing herself and pushing shit on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever. And she was like, I'll use my sexuality. And now when she's in the UFC, like you were saying before with, you know, Reebok and things like that, a lot of that's been toned down. And she's almost had to, like, stifle the thing that made her special, which was her never quit, promote my ass off attitude. Plus, she's a good fighter and shit like that. And whereas in Invicta, the women are allowed to still do that, which makes for a far more entertaining product.
Yeah. I mean, what you just mentioned there about the women being grateful, when I would do the article, I always basically sort of, you know, tweet it to the, you know, to the women, you know, if they're mentioned in the article, or sort of, you know, say, hey, look at this, what I've wrote about you. I mean, a number of times we'll like the article and stuff, or basically respond with something that shows that they've actually read the article. Like, there's a fighter called, I think it's Ashley Dollface. Mm-hmm. And she made her debut. Dollface, obviously, isn't it? Maybe something, Ashley Greenway, something. And
that'd be a way better surname. If she's born, that's my dad, John Dollface.
She made a debut in Invicta a couple of shows back, and I basically referred to her as a perky punky, because she's one of these, she's got coloured hair, she's got tattoos and that, but she's got like the big smile on her face, and she's sort of like, you know, nice everything. I just referred to her as perky punky, and when she replied, she actually sort of went, just said something like, oh, perky punky, LOL. So she'd read the article. You know, and so it's just sort of nice that you sort of, these ladies, when you sort of, you know, but take the time to basically just sort of have a look at, you know, what you've done and sort of appreciate that basically somebody's written about them, you know, so it's just sort of, you know, but it's just, again, it's just, you know, a good promotion, you know, to actually follow.
Yeah, it's one of the, like, you know, Shannon Knapp, who runs and owns, and I know she owns it, but she runs Invicta, she'll frequently, like posts and things like that about the promotion. you know, and every once in a while, maybe I'll troll Dana White like I did with the April Fool's Day joke, which was still one of my highlights. That and getting banned, he blocked the Half Guarded account. Him and Paige Van Zandt both have blocked Half Guarded, and I'm not
really.
Yeah, I have no idea why. I think that Dana blocked us because I tweeted something about like a union or something, but he didn't block my personal account. And I'm pretty sure Paige blocked me after I wrote that she's a spoiled, delusional brat who doesn't understand what it means to work hard because she thinks she worked really hard, was in the UFC at 20. I'm guessing that's why she blocked halfguarded.com. I don't really know. But we're coming up on an hour here. I know it's late for you. I have to really take a piss. So we'll wrap this up because I can't believe we fucking have an hour. I was going to be like, oh, 20 minutes. I'll be fine. I would say plug shit, but like, you're on Half Guarded. Fuck that. Plug stuff. What do you got coming up? What do you want to, you know, bring attention to? The bookstore? I don't know. Plug something.
Okay. Well, basically, it's just all the stuff that I do on Half Guarded. But just tell you what I do. I do lots of articles. I write about comics. I do the Full Britannia stuff that we mentioned. I did one that a lot of people liked, which was about sort of, kids TV in the UK, which got a lot of people.
Oh my gosh. What the fuck was that? Some of that stuff was like creepy pedophile, like serial killer television, like, why are children allowed to watch this? They like Hansel and Gretel. Someone ate those kids after it was done. Plus, didn't you guys have like a famous TV kid star that was a pedophile or something like that?
Oh, yeah, Jimmy. Yeah, this. I almost put him in the article, but I thought it was maybe going a bit too far. So, you know, but it was basically this guy who did a TV show in the UK called Jim Will Fix It, where he basically would, they basically bring like a kid on kids would write in with something like, oh, I really want to meet Luke Skywalker. And then they basically arrange for him to basically sort of like, you know, meet and they'd film it and everything. Or I want to basically play in a rock band on guitar. And they basically sort of bringing like, you know, some like kids
like
pop band.
Wish,
and so, yeah, it was basically like that every week. But then years and years later, after he died, and he was like a big star who used to do lots of charity, do charity runs and that, so he was like a beloved figure. I mean, it turned out years and years later that he'd basically been, like, you know, molesting kids and stuff.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, but this was like, you know, this was one of these things that, in the BBC it became a scandal because everybody knew about it, but nobody could say anything because they couldn't prove it. And it used to be a thing where when he'd visit hospitals and stuff, would basically say to the kids, pretend you're asleep.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, because of all the people, the only person who actually went out on radio and said what was going on was John Lydon, who was Johnny Rotten in the Sex Pistols, because he didn't give a shit. And he'd heard about it. And he basically, in a radio interview, just said all this stuff about, you know, Jimmy Savile and what he's into and stuff. And it was basically, like, hushed under the carpet. But it's like these things, but it turned out that so many people, but his assaults were, like, in the hundreds. This was, like, a massive, like, you know, scandal. And they even dug up his, the grave where he was, they dug up the body and took the coffin away and cremated it. Because the people with families in the same, like, cemeterium didn't want their families basically sort of in, you know, resting with him. So they dug the coffin up and, like, sort of, you know, cremated him and stuff.
Okay, the idea that Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols basically outed a beloved television figure as a pedophile may be the most British thing I've ever heard in my life.
Maybe I'll have to do a piece on that.
Oh,
maybe.
That'd be fantastic. Like, I didn't know that. Like, that's kind of like in America where Hannibal Buress, who's kind of like a really, really, really great comedian but not super successful yet, and he was the guy that outed Bill Cosby. He started to talk about, like, you know, everybody knows, like, Bill Cosby has been drugging women and raping them, right? And after he said that, that's when it all started. So I can't believe you guys have the same equivalent. Anyways, go on plugging shit, because...
Yeah, okay, and then there's a podcast that I do with Tony Galvin, who was a Fet Man on the Comic Conversation. He was the real names now. But we do a show where basically... We basically what we how we do it now. We basically just like talk a few news things from basically pretty much anything we want to talk about. We'll talk about comics. We'll talk about movies. It tends to be more movie and TV based. But if there's a big story in UFC, we'll talk about that. And then we do a segment where we basically take a year in cinema history. So we started in 1970 and we do a year each week where we basically read out what were the top 10 box office draws for that year, movie wise, and then in each top 10, we basically pick one film what we think is a really good one or means something to us, and then we pick a film which we slate. So we basically pick a film that we absolutely hate or really dislike or whatever, and then we just sort of discuss that, and then we always go through the films that I've seen or comics I'm reading, that sort of thing. So it's just kind of like a podcast that we basically it's called Tales from the Couch Zone, and it's basically just us talking about shit that we want to talk about and stuff. It tends to be more based around the stuff that I'm into, and and Fetman basically guides me through it and does an excellent job of keeping on track and keep making the shows interesting. But we basically do one of it. We record it on a Sunday and we do one of those a week.
Oh, you guys do that on Sunday?
Yeah, that's that kind of like, for our times, because he's always, basically, because it's a time when we are both actually free, so we always basically do it on a Sunday.
Hmm. I didn't know what day you guys recorded it, although it's always usually up on halfguarded.com on a Tuesday, followed by Comic Conversations on Wednesday, also hosted by Tony Galvin, because he's awesome. And, okay, real quick, without spoiling anything, my favorite fucking villain of all time is Apocalypse. And you got to fucking already see X-Men Apocalypse, because Hollywood cares more about Europe than they do America, even though America makes all the fucking money for those motherfuckers. Will I like X-Men Apocalypse if I grew up in that era loving Apocalypse as a villain? I've liked every X-Men film Bryan Singer ever directed.
I can only speak for myself, because I basically have very way out opinions on films. I mean, I'm the only person in the world that actually thinks Wyatt Earp is a better film than Tombstone. Everyone else seems to go the other way.
Oh my gosh, that's it, you're fired. What the oh no! Oh, fuck! Tony can never hear this. Anyways, go on.
Okay, but I went to see it. It's been getting like really, average to poor reviews. I personally really enjoyed it. I thought it's one of those films. It felt like it was a film that was made just pretty much for comic book and X-Men fans. If you're not a fan of that, there's not much there for you. But I personally really, really enjoyed it. And I really liked what they did with Apocalypse. They just sort of did enough in there to keep him like interested in everything. So I personally really liked the film. I think if you like all the other Bryan Singers, you'll enjoy it. It's not as good as First Class or Days of Future Past. It's not anyway as good as those, but I think it's, I would say it's kind of on a par with X2.
Wow, and I think that's really good.
maybe just a little bit below, but I personally, it's basically, it's one of these films that it's not, it's pretty much a film of just like another X-Men adventure. It's not one that is basically sort of like going to be massively, massively groundbreaking or based on a classic story. The only thing I'll go more into this on the podcast when we record it tomorrow, is that Jennifer Lawrence basically should give up these films, because she was basically just one tone, phoning it in. She was really poor in it.
Yeah, I've always felt like her involvement in the movies is just not good for anyone, because she doesn't seem to really want to do it. But when they put her in there, it's like, oh, it's Jennifer Lawrence. We have to make Mystique a bigger, more important character. But Mystique is not that really, she's not really that kind of character. And so I always felt like her presence kind of throws things off a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind them sort of doing different stuff, because, the best thing to do is basically make a good film based on the X-Men universe. And, but yeah, she's just not sort of... you can see the difference if you watch the first two, when she was sort of still becoming a star and she was like, really into character. And in this one, she's just like, really, really, monotone and everything. The only bit in this film where she actually shows any emotion is the bit where, and now, I've seen to spoil because they actually show it in the trailer, is when Quicksilver says that Magneto's his father. And that is the only bit of an emotion. Everything else, when she's, there's the times when she's got to do these like emotional, inspiring speeches when she's doing like, you are all X-Men now. And she's just sort of really just, you know, it's sort of, you could tell that it was, she kind of had to deal with it. It was like, we'll do one take, that's it, you know. And plus as well, the fact that she, I've heard the thing that she had it in a contract that she only did like two scenes in the makeup. You know, you can sort of tell it in the film because she spends most of it in like human form, even at bits, you know, and the kind of, because in the other films, she was in human form, but she was like undercover, so there was a reason for it. In this, it's just basically, you can tell it's just that she didn't want to get into the makeup, you know, but everything else, you know, is absurd. I mean, Michael Fassbender's really good in it. You know, the Nightcrawler character's great. I mean, he looks so cool and stuff, but, yeah, so we don't really, I mean, there's little things, but you know, generally speaking, I think it's an enjoyable romp. Nowhere near as good as Civil War, though, but it's still a good film.
Yeah. And that's a fine way to end your you know, debut on the Half-Guarded Hour, because I have to rebrand shit for iTunes. But, Dan, I want to really thank you, not just for doing this now, but for all the work you do on the site. I had Grady on last week, and other people, I don't really remember because I totally lost it, but you're like one of the people that, you know, you send stuff in, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to read it. I love reading it. I wish you formatted shit a little bit better on the back end, but that's not really your issue, that's my issue. It's fine. I have to do something to earn all that big money I'm bringing in. But if you guys are not, like, fuck this show, fuck me, who gives a shit, but Dan's stuff on halfguarded.com, it's really good. He obviously, you know, he mentioned, he does the podcast once a week with Tony Galvin. He does generally one, if not two, articles a week. And they're not short shit. Like, I'll type out 400 words and be like, I've contributed for the week. And you're just like 2,000 words of awesome. And I'm like, fuck. Like, that's like a week or two's worth of work for me. So, again, everything you do for the site is fantastic. I will inevitably have you on the show again before July in UFC 200, and I'm hoping to be there, and we'll do all kinds of crazy shit, because, usually I go to, you know, Admin Tony's house for that kind of weekend, but his kids are playing baseball because they're fucking good and stuff like that, and they got tournaments or whatever, so I'm not, it's not a good weekend to come out, so poor Mike has to be alone. So, anyways, but again, thank you for everything you do for the site, and everybody, thank you for listening. I'll let you say goodbye to everybody, because when this hangs up, this recording ends, and then I can go to the bathroom.
Okay, goodbye, everybody. You know, I want to say thank you to Half Garden, to Mike, for basically publishing all my stuff and basically giving me a voice on his site and everything. So thank you. I hope you enjoy my stuff, and if you don't, fuck you.
Fantastic. Awesome. Fuck you guys. I will talk to you later.
Bye. See you later.